Yours is a wonderful Australian story, Peter. Did you always know that it was unique, that it was special, that it was different, this journey of yours?
Yeah, for those in the room, good evening, everyone. For those in the room who don't know, obviously I was born in Korea and through circumstances found myself in the southwest of Western Australia and grew up in a big family. And this is a long-winded story, so you'll have to bear with me. But I was so happy playing sport and so happy in life. I didn't really know that I looked different, was different in a sheep and wheat farming community in Kojunup until the town bully actually told me, you know, you look nothing like your brothers. And I said, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? I don't look like my brother. He said, well, go home and have a look in the mirror. Your eyes are squintier than the rest of your brothers. And that was a shock to me at the age of 6 or 7. I went home and gave myself a studious examination in the mirror and suddenly realised that, yes, my brothers were all fair-haired and looked a little bit different to me. So I had the heart-to-heart discussion with my parents, who are obviously here tonight, and they told me the story of how I came to be born in Korea and ended up in Australia. But to answer your question, it wasn't until I got to a more mature stage in life, Jared, 24, 25, where I realised that whether you're spiritual or whether you believe in fate or you believe in destiny, the serendipitous nature of the fact that I was able to end up in Australia playing Australian rules football was truly something that I was not going to give up on easily. A magnificent opportunity, and that was a real motivating force in my career to make the most, and I was just speaking about it, to make the most of opportunity, and it came tough. It came really tough. I mean, I was delisted. There's probably not many in the Hall of Fame who delisted after 1 year. Thankfully, I had the opportunity to go to a great club like North Melbourne, where I learnt a whole lot, was able to play in finals and grand finals and those sorts of things. And from about 24 or 25, there was no way I wasn't going to get the best out of myself after that.
Now, I'm in your hands here, Peter, and it's up to you. But did your birth mum ever see you play footy?
Yes, she did. In fact, without wanting to put anyone on the spot, I was going to mention it later. But for me, the support has always been about family and people that love you. And I've certainly been blessed with parents who brought me up and siblings who supported me massively. But I will say that from the time, it's something that you always think about, where you've come from, who your parents are. Unfortunately, I didn't have the courage to actually find my parents. My mother found me when I was about 25 years of age, and I'm forever thankful for that. She had the courage to make that first step, and she and her husband are actually here tonight with my mum and dad and my mother-in-law and my children. Thank you. But I remember playing in a game of football, Jared, and everyone else here, and it was actually a preliminary final against the Sydney Swans, which we lost. But I remember at one stage feeling goosebumps all over me and having a feeling like my birth mother was watching me play football. And when a little while later I spoke to her, it turned out that they'd actually tracked me down and worked it all out, and that was the game that they'd had through satellite feed and were watching there in California, which was extraordinary.
Serendipity indeed. Your first year at North Melbourne was a premiership year. You're a young fella just trying to find your feet, having already been delisted at one club. Were you vulnerable during that year, and what was the experience like?
Yeah, I've been delisted in 1995, and Dennis Pagan just gave me an opportunity, which would have been very controversial. When you're young, you don't think about these sorts of things, but I imagine that he overruled the entire recruiting department at North Melbourne and said, no, I've seen something in this young guy. And it was a tough year. I was on the borderline all the time. Actually got dropped to play against my previous club, Fremantle. And that was rare with clubs, players coached by Dennis Pagan, because the one thing Dennis liked to do when you played against your old team, he'd always select you, because he would say, and the words are still ringing very clearly in my mind, desire is the greatest motivating force there is. I wasn't playing well enough, didn't deserve to. I played in an atrocious preliminary final against Brisbane in 1996, and Dennis was very much into assessment. Straight after the game, he'd line you all up and you'd go through every individual performance, and I was hiding. I was always strategic, though. I was hiding between Mick Martin and Wayne Carey, and they'd both played well and were Dennis's pets. So there was that angle, and also the fact that these are big guys, and if they lean forward with their big delts and I lean back, there was every possibility that Dennis wouldn't actually see me there in between the two of them. And he looked at me, and I was ready for the famous Dennis Pagan bake, and he just said, "Peter, you've let the biggest opportunity of your life pass you by." So I'm 19, been delisted, a little bit fragile, I have to say, Jared. Mm. What does that mean? A week out from a grand final, I think my place is in jeopardy. I was anxious about it, obviously, for 48 hours, and then Dennis did the most amazing thing. I was intimidated by him, I was scared of him, I respected him greatly, but on Monday morning he just came up to me very quietly and said, "You're playing in the grand final, train well, prepare well, I have the utmost confidence in you that you're going to be able to contribute." And that just made me feel like I was 6'1".
And you did play well, but by 99, that's when you were going. You had 31 and kicked 4 goals in a grand final. And then you went back, well, you played another year, won the best and fairest and went back to the Dockers. Now, this is a very significant moment in the history of the Fremantle Football Club. You are their first inductee. You captained them, you won best and fairest for them. I think you gained credibility for them. What does this mean to you to be the first Docker in?
It means a lot. First of all, I obviously acknowledge the wonderful career that I had at North Melbourne. It was a very difficult decision to come back to Western Australia. I made the decision, and certainly it's not lost on me the impact and importance of being Fremantle's first player in the Hall of Fame. I had a great time at Fremantle. I'd like to think in a small way that some of the players that you see taking all before them now were in some way influenced in those years that I played there. We played finals for the first time, we won finals for the first time, but to coin a phrase used by their current coach, they're going to write their own story, and I'm just a bystander watching on and hoping for the best.
When you played at Subiaco in the best years, there was a fan or a couple of them, they would ring a cowbell every time you got the ball.
That's mum and dad.
The cowbell. That became part of who you were in the West.
It was. There was actually a few of them, and for most of the people in the room who support other clubs at Subiaco Oval, you'd hear the cowbell going. I used to love the sound of it because it obviously meant I had the footy. And in a nice touch at the end of my career when I retired, there was actually two or three of them. They were sent in, and they now have pride of place in my bookshelf there. Passionate supporters who came along and supported me so well. It was nice to hear at the grounds, Jared. Not so nice walking down South Terrace on a Sunday night when you're having dinner and they were still ringing the bell. That was a little awkward and embarrassing.
You were a player who had a view of what the future would look like, a plan for after football. You were the president of the Players Association. You were thoughtful. You are a radio host now, not a sports radio host, a radio host. Has that served you well, that vision to think about beyond the game?
At times it has, definitely. And look, in my last year, I probably made some decisions that were controversial. There's no doubt about that. But it was difficult to be criticised for... I was really trying to set myself up for life after football. I regret some things, but I think it's always important, and still to this day, the game's so much more professional now. There's so many more opportunities for young players. But it's all about balance. We know it can be a cruel game. We know it can be a ruthless game. Your career can be snuffed out very, very quickly. So I've always had a view that football is a privilege. It's an honour. You don't know how long it's going to go, but I was always very keen to make sure there was life after football. And through my parents encouraging me to go to university, through me never saying no to an opportunity, which has been good and bad along the way, it was one thing I was very conscious of, and that was that there's going to be life after footy. Interestingly, my kids will be watching now, and it's great to see for them to be able to see some of those highlights, because since they're born, they're quite young. They've actually just thought I was some sort of buffoon who joins them at dinner every night. So it's good to see that I can actually say, look, I played footy one day.
The best of both worlds is what you were, Peter. And maybe a few thank yous to finish.
Thank you, Jared. First of all, I mentioned family already. My mother and father who raised me and my siblings, I appreciate their support immensely. My birth mother and her husband, it is amazing. It is amazing when you get that phone call, when there's not a day that goes by where you wonder about those loose connections and those questions that you already have being answered. So I thank you for having the courage to call me, and it's truly a blessing. I'd like to thank my two football clubs, the North Melbourne Football Club, extraordinary organisation where a young guy who's really at rock bottom in football sense can go there and learn so much from so many wonderful people. The Fremantle Football Club, so proud to be up here and the first person in the Hall of Fame representing Fremantle. You learn so much about yourself in tough times, that's for sure. To my wife Lana and my three daughters, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. The word selfish gets used a bit, and you have to be in professional sport. You have to be in AFL football. You just have to concentrate on you so many times. And the sacrifices my family, my immediate family, my wife and my kids have had to make, I'm truly thankful for that. There's many other people, of course, that I'd like to thank. I've probably missed a few as well. I'd like to thank the game. I know that sounds a bit glib. It sounds very broad, but... No, and Michael O'Loughlin spoke about it as well. You play for 15 years. You're so privileged and honoured to be able to represent the club and the game, and you walk away. Well, I feel like I walk away and I still owe the game so much. I certainly don't feel like the game owes me anything. So I'd like to thank the game. That includes the teammates, the coaches, my junior football clubs, all of those things. I just feel truly honoured and privileged to be standing here before you. I thank you for your time. Congratulations to the other inductees. Can't wait to see who the legend is. And the final thing I'd like to do, because I know he won't get due recognition for what is a sterling job, how about a round of applause also for Jared Whateley? What a job he's done.
Thanks, Peter.